Okay, well, thank you. Thanks again for all the presenters. And thank you so much for your attention and saving all the questions until now. So now is the time. So any questions for any speakers today? Yes, Brian.
I'm not aware of this technology, but so how difficult is writing the code for teaching a robot? This is general for overall for everybody. So how difficult is to write the algorithm to teach the robot to recognize what's a weed and what's the target crop?
Why invent it? Use off-the-shelf technology. There's commercially available machines right now. They're big, and there's more in the pipeline. So I don't do it. That's the easiest answer you're going to get, probably.
I do it, though. So someone has to develop the technology, and I'm an engineer. So Steve, it's more like a weed scientist, right? Mm-hmm. So it's different, our role. But we do exactly that. We develop the algorithms. So there's techniques that we use, and you're right. I mean, the machine learning idea is that a machine, like a computer, can learn from data to complete some tasks, like self-driving cars, they learn from data. So we train the systems to detect different kinds of weeds. It's not an easy task. And the main part is like you do it in the field. So it's not in a controlled environment. And it depends what kind of accuracy you want to achieve. And the worst part with when you spray is not even to miss one of the weeds. That's okay. That's somehow acceptable. If you spray 90% of the weeds and miss 10%. But what happens when you spray on the crop? You might damage the crop. So what we found that the challenging part wasn't so much the vision-based system, but the spraying system. If I detect here the crop and next to the crop it's a weed, and I want to try to spray the weed and by accident spray the crop, that's not acceptable. So you need to develop a sprayer that has like few centimeters accuracy. You want to spray in a specific spot and you target that. So it's complicated, it's not simple, but as Steve said, I mean, there are a lot of people and companies that are working on this area, and the university also, we are working on that, and I'm very, very positive that we're going to see these technologies in the like commercials. We have commercial systems already as we presented, but we are going to see more and more.
I'd like to add something here. Many of the algorithms that is the AI algorithms, they already implemented, and there are lots of knowledge based available online, you know, developing using different code like Python codes, and those can be downloadable and they can be used for video for different applications. But the major issue is to customize these to the application itself. I'm only talking here about the vision part, not really the mechanical and the mechanical part of the problem. I'm talking about the vision, the recognition part. So those exist there, and there are fast algorithms to do that. They need to be customized to the application. So for specific weeds, specific application, for example, in our case, we'd like to detect fruit, strawberry flowers and fruits. We won't find these online, so we have to prepare our data for it. But the framework itself, the structure of the AI, different algorithms, they are already there. They just need to be fine-tuned. And of course, improved. I mean, nothing would be perfect, but there is a starting point already available for that.
All right, to answer your question, it doesn't work. Okay. We now just to transfer the science or technology into practice and need still a long way to go. So that's why we need extension. So that's my job. So we know the science about here, practice about here. That's a big gap now. So extension work, extension agents can transfer, can interpret those data and to make that into practice use. Thank you.
I have a question that might be more for Steve or Matthew. I get the sense that robotic weeding is perhaps where the herbicide industry was 70 years ago, where there's this huge need, there's lots of opportunity, there's a few companies dabbling in it, and then over the course of several decades, there was tremendous growth in new products, new herbicides that that have sort of ran their course, and a lot of that development occurred in agronomic crops, large acreage crops with herbicides. And I'm just curious, could this move along faster, robotic weeding and some of the commercialization of this, the advance of this technology, if there was also the push, the involvement in agronomic crops, you know, where you have large acreage where there's a, you know, potentially a big market share that companies could get. If so, what would it take to throw the weight of that part of agriculture behind this to move it along for everybody?
John Deere asked me to come in and explain several years ago why California vegetable crops don't have herbicide-resistant weeds. Well, it's one-word answer. We cultivate. I guess that's two words. I said, okay, John Deere, your question. You guys could build. You guys have the capacity to build an intelligent cultivator by tomorrow morning at noon. And they said, yeah, but our customers are corn farmers. That was their answer. That was the response. Would we benefit? The greatest need is in specialty crops. I argue, and Blue River, which is now part of John Deere, got started in lettuce because there's a need to replace, in that case, thinning. The needs are different. They're clearly different. And I hope that development happens there. But I think the best possible thing for it would be to be fragmented and meet the needs of all the different commodities. I think we've seen quite enough of what we get from uniformity, from Roundup Ready, and the wonderful super weeds that are in the Southeast, which are not, of course, wonderful. I think the best thing we can have is this diverse, dynamic system which will create stability. That's my answer. Specialty crops are the great place for a test track. That's what I call them, the test track. And I've said too much.
So some of those larger chemical companies are interested in precision sprayers, because I think there's the potential for be like a co-evolution with autonomous or smart sprayers and the chemical industry. There's molecules on the shelves of like BASF Bayer, which were very expensive to synthesize and apply at a broadcast level. But if you can use a concentrated dose of the herbicide, you use it with this precision spray applicator, they might be able to bring, you know, I'd say new modes of action off the shelf. It's just they're so expensive to synthesize and apply at a broadcast level. But if you have a precision sprayer where you're using a 100th the amount of a broadcast application, there's that potential for company to invest in those new molecules.
But the best possible thing that could happen is that the agricultural chemical companies are not needed because there's only four of them and they have too much control right now. We need diversity.
So maybe that's what'll bring the corn, soybean, cotton around will be herbicide resistance. Right now we have water hemp that's, you know, resistant to seven different modes of action. So when you eventually can't spray anything, then maybe that's what it'll actually take, is as that becomes more widespread, or injury from new technology that's being, you know, commercialized. So there's probably other things that'll be driving it, but I just wonder when we'll start seeing some of this in other crops.
Have to be cheap, efficient, lots of them.
I was wondering if any of you had comment on the state of intellectual property in AI and robotics right now.
That's a good one. I'll tell you the story of the Robovator.
Sure.
The only thing that's patented is... software.
Really?
It's different. It's very different. Go ahead.
No, I agree. I think it depends on the project, the application. So it's difficult to say, but now people try to patent the software. This is the important part, not so much the hardware.
I believe it was, Steve, that was showing the information on what it costs to hand weave. Do you know, is anybody working on the other side of that? Is anybody working on the efficiency of hand weeding to make them weed better? Is it a moving target for you that's getting cheaper, or is that just a stagnant thing?
To make what cheaper?
Hand weeding. Improve the efficiency of the motion of the people that are actually doing the weeding. Is anybody looking at that? Are you chasing a moving target that it's getting cheaper to hand weed, or is it just kind of stagnant?
Not for hand weeding. There's a lot going on in California to work on the efficiency of hand harvesting strawberries and lettuce, that sort of thing. But that's something that was not talked about here is the actual mapping. That's something we're beginning to do is map where the strawberry harvesting is at. And then Stavros Vokiakis, and you can correct my spelling, Giannis is a major prof. He's working on trying to have carts that move strawberry trays back and forth to the pickers, so you reduce the non-productive time. And then there are lots of ways to try to reduce the non-productive time. But as far as hand weeding, the only one I know is Bowles Farming's Tri-Teal, where they put cell phones on hoe handles to measure the chopping so that they could map the location. That's the only one. That wasn't efficiency. It was more mapping. But
okay, thank you.
I'm sorry, I don't know. To answer your question, don't know.
Okay, thank you. Question?
This was a comment about efficiencies with sprays and hitting the non-target, missing the target crop and missing the crop and hitting the target weed. I'm doing some work with post-emergent, non-selective, non-synthetic herbicides, mainly fatty acid derivatives in organic production. And I think it would be especially interesting and judicious because organic herbicides could cost $95 for 5 gallons to 1,000 square feet, which doesn't get you very far. And it's expensive. And to use an OMRI-approved herbicide to hit the weeds and miss the target with this technology would be especially interesting to organic growers. Specialty crops aside, I think that it's especially a unique time to consider that fourth agricultural revolution and using some of the other herbicide technologies outside of proprietary genetics. I think that would be worth investing in.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. And, of course, we didn't have time to cover everything. But what we are also thinking to do and what we are planning to do is, and Steve, please correct me, I mean, we can have, like, categorized the weeds in three types, right? I mean, broadleaf, grass, and others or something. So our goal is at the same time we scout, and if you have three different types of chemicals, selective chemicals, you spray, and we are building this system right now. I didn't have time to present it. But at the same time, you spray in different types with different selective chemicals. And we try to see if we can do it with using like steam or something like that. But so far, I think for us, like some of the chemicals are doing better work. But there's a lot of things to improve. But again, I really believe that we are going to go that way. The technology, I mean, is here.
Well, so, that's something that I agree with.
If
be honest, that we haven't had time to talk about all the other things. I mean, there's the spraying, but there's also hot canola oil, which is another alternative, and which might be, you know, some of these non-cultivation methods, non-tillage methods might be better for the wetter areas that can't cultivate for most of the year. A few years ago, I was writing an article, and Frank Priscilla put me in touch with a club from Minnesota, organic farmers, and one guy called me up and said, yeah, last year I had about 3 or 4 days I could cultivate my corn. So I get it. That, but there's probably more days you could spray.
I want to add something here too, that we are really in the beginning of the AI evolution, so we're scratching the surface. So most of the stuff that we have seen now is only using, for example, RGB images. Those are 3 bands only. There are lots of things can be. I mean, every day there is a development in the architecture of the networks used in this field. And I, in my opinion, that is going to be a matter, as long as a human being can detect it, the machine will be able to detect it, and maybe better too.
So when it comes to sprayer with weeds, I don't know if you're familiar with Dr. Slaughter from UC Davis. Yeah, he's been working with those things for lots of years, and he have lots of results. Real time, not so, you know, when you are looking, there are some weeds that actually grows just very near to the crop, and I think Slaughter showed that he can, you know, spray on that, and it's difficult because the way people, you know, create all of these things is they store the GPS locations of the crop. So then they can look at that, you know, if this is not the location of the crop, then this is a weed. Yeah. So, yeah, there's a lot of work already being done, and I think the one that Yanis presented, the Blue River, that's already a way step ahead of detecting weeds and spraying on it.
So is the smart spray, high precision spray system commercialized yet, or if not,
yeah.
How
yes.
It is?
Yes, that was the first thing that was commercialized, was the lettuce thinning. Mm-hmm. Blue River was just one of them. There's AgRobotics. I mean, that's commercialized. There's 50% of the lettuce in California is machine thinned by sprayer. Yeah, I mean, that's not new, guys. I have a question. Why fly? I can see in Saskatchewan, in a wheat field, massive, massive, massive hectareage. But in strawberry fields, why? Why fly? Why not put a sensor on a tractor? Put one on every bed. Why fly? I don't see the point. I just do not see the point. What we need is a good one that you could, a good sensor you can run a meter over the row. Why fly? We're having difficulty in Camarillo, then Southern California. There's a lot of people. There's a lot of airports. You can't fly everywhere. You have to get permission. You can't fly over workers in the field. It's a hassle. Why do it? And the growers are going, what do I do with these pictures? Tell me something that I need to do. Otherwise, leave me alone. You need something practical that has value with a dollar sign behind it.
I agree with you, Stephen. I think that's important for me. What we really offer to the growers is not only we have these nice images and that's it. And at least what we see from the citrus part, so the new insurance policy now, they require all the growers to report more details per field, like how many number of trees, and maybe categorize them based on the age or some based on the height. And in Florida, there are some growers that have huge fields. that it is impossible for them to go. Like the examples I saw you, it was like 5,000 trees in one field and 5,000 gaps. Even to get this information, how many trees are missing, to go and order and replant because they know exactly the location. I will give you another example of what we do with drones with sugarcane. There are some technologies now, they mechanically plant sugarcanes. They do it manually, but also they do it mechanically. Doing that mechanically, they damage a little bit the crop, so they don't have a good germination. So they want to see, again, they find these gaps. So they want all put the sensor in the tractor or fly and give them a map just with the gaps and give them some information about the field. For example, here you have 10% gaps. Here you have 15, here you have 2, and then we'll decide, okay, maybe I need to go back with my RTK GPS, the auto navigation system, and replant, because when the plant sugarcane goes, like, grow a lot, they cover the entire field, and there's a crop that can stay there for 3 years, so they can lose a lot of money. So this, for me, is an application that, okay, you go, fly, detect, develop the map, give the map to the machine, and the machine goes and replants. Something similar we try to do with sprayers for citrus or fertilizer, but fertilizers that a lot of people don't, they're cheap right now, so they don't care. But you're right, I mean, this is where I see the gap. Not just to develop nice pictures and show them, you give them something, help them make profit or reduce cost.
I think I have another question on the question, about the question itself, which is, you're asking about the need for post-processed images, and you talk about just going in the fields using a tractor or something and do stuff real time, or you're actually questioning the difference between drone type of applications versus ground-based applications.
Say in horticultural crops, the area, the fields are much smaller.
Okay.
Why do we need to fly? Flying is more complicated than ground. You're driving equipment through the field. You're spraying for mites, for fungicides, whether it's organic or conventional. And so it just seems, it seems like people are a bit enamored and it's a bit too fun. We need to really think about the practical aspects. And airports are an issue, flat out. No question about it.
Yeah, I agree with you. The airport, if you are in the airbase and the airspace, you have to get a permit from FAA. But UAF, actually, we have to get a permit from them as well. So that's more complicated. I don't know about the other state, but the UAF requests that. So before you fly any field, you have to give them everything before you can do that.
From a technical point of view, I think my answer to this question is it's a catch-22. So sometimes you capture very high-resolution ground-based images, work out a whole workflow and algorithm, and then you think, okay, what if I wanted to apply this for a larger area for what can be more efficient moving from one field, even the field is small, but moving from one field to the other fields and not really being linked to the operations on the ground. Because if you specifically had missions to collect the data on the ground, it can be lots of cost, unless if robotics are being used for using tractor or something with gas involved in and other costs. So it's a catch-22, either using these kind of high resolution imagery, develop a workflow to get the maximum of what you can get, and then try to implement it on a lower resolution images captured from drone, or vice versa. You actually have the drone images, you develop the algorithm and what I can do more using ground based on as integrated into operations. So I think there is the final answer would be the dollar, is how much cost this can be done. It's a business model that can be adopted to get this done.
Real quick. I want to answer or comment a little bit. So diesel, okay, is one of the reasons why flying drones or remote sensing would be still a useful technology. Also, depending on the crop that you're growing, if you can't get in the field and you don't spray, if you have to use airplanes to spray your fields, like say for instance rice, for instance, you're not getting in there, but overhead drone technology actually still has a major place for nutrient deficiencies, disease, insects, so on and so forth, stress. So I mean, I think there's still, in my opinion, I think there's still a very valid point why we should have, you know, drone technology and, you know, remote sensing type of stuff. Actually, ideally, it would be really nice if we had some kind of a satellite system that had the technology and the sensors that we could actually just use satellites and not worry about drones ever again. But that doesn't exist right now that I'm aware of. You know, Joe, you may know better than I. And that's all I got to say.
Walnut trees, you cannot get the information from the ground. So I'm trying to help the moderator keep the discussion going, but I think clearly if somebody's looking for a business opportunity, I think because we're going to drive the tractor through the field, so the cost of the actual data recording, the guy's making a fungicide application or he's using a bug vac that we do for Ligus control, they're going through the field. And so the cost of the labor is nothing. You simply have to gather the information. To me, I think there is a business opportunity out there. And the point I was making in challenging this thing is that I've heard several growers, what are you going to tell me that I don't already know? A strawberry field, you know, it's a $60,000 an acre crop. They are in the field every day. They're scouting it. They've got harvester crews in there. What are you going to tell them that's of value that they don't already know? They want to know. They're busy. They want to know when they need to do something. You got a broken line there, broken irrigation drip line. You've got a nutrient deficiency. Those are the types of things. Otherwise, I don't care to see your pictures. Just tell me. Give me an actionable item. That's what they want.
Okay, well, it's time to start the business meeting, so I'd like to end the workshop now. But thank you so much again, all the presenters. And thanks, audience, for staying until the end. And so we'd like to start the business meeting now, and it's going to take only 30 minutes. And this is going to be the business meeting for vegetable crop management interest group. So if you have interest in the topic we just talked about, anything related with vegetable crop management, I'd like to ask you to stay. And maybe if you can gather up in the center. Okay, so we have a few items that we have to go over. The first item is to decide the next secretary. So I'm the chair this year, so I'm an outgoing chair. And the chair-elect was Brian, so he's going to be a chair from now on until the next meeting. And then King Ren is going to be the chair-elect. Do we have any volunteers for the new secretary? Oh, okay. Anyone second? Okay. Can I have your name, please? Okay, good. So we have the new secretary. And next, I'd like to discuss what we like to do for the next meeting. And we can choose to do workshop or organize a tour, or we can also plan like a plain oral session. So we have three options. And if we decided to do workshop, they like us to do more interactive sessions. So instead of like a standard 15 minutes presentation, either do shorter presentation and have more time for open discussion toward the end, or it can be a hands-on demonstration, or you know, something different from oral session that the people can get more hands-on information. So, do you have any suggestions for workshop or tour that we like to plan for the next meeting? Like defeating the workshop.
Yeah, like you point, so we didn't have a workshop now, and we like flash session. Do they typically allow for an industry to do 2 years of workshop back to back?
Yes, yeah, I don't think they're concerned about doing the workshop again and again. As long as we are, you know, trying to organize workshop with different topic, and then the topic is, you know, something to address the newest technology, or you know, the main concern right now in the, you know, horticultural industry. As long as the topic is interesting, and then you know, not something that can address the new issues, then I think they're okay with us doing the workshop again. Yeah. Yeah, so actually like right now we have 55 interest groups, and they accept only 25 workshops. So
this morning Tracy said that they had 35 and they rejected, or you know, they did not approve only one proposal. So they have, if the proposal is not very sound, they can switch to Ora or some other, you know. So she was saying that there is no proposal was turned down, except one. So 25, but 35 they received, and they did.
Yeah, depending on how we put in the proposal, if they don't think that it's supposed to be a workshop, if you know, if they think that it can be just an oral session, and if they didn't see like a hands-on part or more interactive component in a proposal, then sometimes it's not like complete rejection, but we might get a suggestion that, you know, why don't we do just oral session. So if we decided to do workshop, then we have to be a little bit more creative, that we have to make some changes from oral session, and you know, just emphasize that, you know, it's we have interactive component. Any ideas for workshops? Yes?
Not so much a workshop idea, but for those who read that office for me, they require a form of saying that the main reason for a PID to exist is not to hold a workshop. And that has been a decades long, expectation that they're.
Yeah. Yeah. The next location is going to be in Orlando, Florida. So, I mean, we don't. I mean, you know, we can think of something that, you know, maybe the main industry in Florida, something unique for the next location. It can be just inviting industry speakers and try to have a panel discussion. It doesn't really have to be the standard that the presenters from universities and then open discussion at the end. It can be any type of, it can be any format as long as people can interact with each other and then learn from each other. Yeah, that's a good suggestion. Yeah, we have a big team working on the same crop, and for example, strawberry is one of the crops that we are working on high precision spray and high precision mechanical harvesting and yield prediction, and we have also disease forecast system based on the weather model, and so we could choose the main program that are very specific to Florida that are trying to improve from multiple disciplines. That might be a good topic.
So the general request of workshop not like a tour, right?
It can be a tour. We can choose to do a workshop. Yeah, if it's Orlando, we have a lot of ornamental industry near the conference area. If you want to see commercial strawberry production, then we have to drive at least 1.5 hours. But people from University of Florida, we can organize a tour, and we can also do demonstration of harvesting ropa, something like that. That's possible, but it's going to be 1.5 hour driving. And if you couldn't design out, we can send out emails to the interest group members and then propose some ideas. The idea of the tour near Orlando, different ornamental industries or strawberry industry, which is 1.5 hour driving from the meeting place, but we can demonstrate something like the new study that we are doing, and we can do that too. Yeah, that's right. I didn't think of it. Yeah. Yeah, we have ornamentals, but the dry. Yeah, we have a lot of greenhouse production in Orlando. Yeah, actually, it's pretty quiet in July in Florida. Not much going on. Yeah. Yes.
For those who don't know me, my name is Daniel Lescobar from Texas A&M. I was recently elected member at large at the board. So this is relatively new. I'm learning because this is. But the board member at large before was up to this meeting is Brian Trader. But he will be the outgoing and I will be an incoming. So I'm just attending a few working groups. But anything I will pass to the board. I mean, you can contact also Tracy on the board. But I will try to know. Channel some of the information or question that you may have, and in terms of working groups, workshops, or tours, or one of the things that they discuss at the meeting is just trying. I don't know how many members do we have in this interesting group.
Actually, I don't know. I don't know if there's a way to
I think it's fairly large.
I mean,
that's also my area, you know. But, you know, maybe, you know, trying to engage, trying to get more participation within that. And then the other is perhaps either workshops or discussions or tours. It could be also complemented with other interesting groups. So it's not only related to ours. We had some discussion in another group to bring, you know, agronomy. I mean, some activities from the society that can bring some expertise or speakers or whatever. But anyway, just wanted to let you know.
I mean, if you took the focus of this as being, you know, technology in our industry, being in production doesn't necessarily matter. It would be helpful if we could see crops, but I mean, if we're really there to see sort of like the state of the art in technology or what's the next, what's the cutting edge, you really don't have to have all that much production to see that. I mean, it would be more interesting to see the technology. I mean, it could be a little bit broader than vegetable or fruit production. It could be ornamentals because there's a lot of automation that's happening there. And so then it gives us a little bit more robust group to do it.
Yes. Another interesting topic for either workshop or tour could be alternative crop research, and that's something like becoming more active in many states, and in Florida too we have many new crops that people are studying, and we have different crops, pomegranate, blackberry, and herbs, artichoke, that are not common in subtropical climate, but we are trying to study if we can grow this crop, and some crops are becoming more successful, and we have some commercial production going on. And we organize many tours on those new crops. So it doesn't have to be a tour. You know, I think alternative crop is something like becoming a hub study topic in many states. So it can be a topic for workshop. And if we want to do a tour, we have many sites in Florida that we can do too as well.